Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, it's Marcia Cook, and it's A Good Story is a Good Story, and tonight I have a co-host. It's been a long time since I've had a co-host, okay, and it's our Jeffries. Hi, Jeff. How are you?
Hi, Marcia. I'm fine. I'm very fine. Thank you. Thanks so much for welcoming me and letting me join.
Yes, thank you very much for coming on the show. It's been a while since Virginia's been gone for a while. She's doing her heritage, and she should be through soon. And she had a show. Actually, she had a show Monday. But on the network, we have a lot of different shows, and I think I'll talk about that just for a few minutes, and then, Jeff, you can say who you are, and then we're going to bring Amy out. But let's just see what we have. Okay. Thursday, we have Fran Lewis, who is doing her book discussion. It's going to be a great show. And then we have Friday, a paranormal show. Well, Fran Lewis's show is at 3 Eastern and 2 Central. And it's a two-hour show. And then the paranormal hour is with Willow Cross and J.H. Glaze. And that is going to be with Andrea Perrone, who did the Conjuring movie. And she has her book, the book. She's been on the show. She is a great guest. She's touring, and Willow called, they talked, and she is going to call from her location. And, I haven't seen The Conjuring yet. I'm waiting for it to come. I couldn't find people to go with me. Nobody wants scary movies. I'm dying to see it. So I think it's coming out. And I think it'll be, it'll be on demand really soon. That's what I heard. But she's a wonderful guest, and she is a really different author. I mean, it was so much fun having her on. And so she's going to be on Willow's show. I think I'll just be hanging out to hear her. And then, let's see, I have next week, Halloween special show. And this is going to be a very interesting show because Willow is my co-host, and we are going to have a lot of guests, and they're all going to be the characters of their novels, and I will be Virginia Templeton, I think, and Willow will be Remy, and I think it's going to be a really fun show, and guests are invited to, pop in to say hi, and that is going to be on at 8 o'clock Central, 9, actually it's not, I think that, well, it might be a little later. It's either going to be 8 or 9 Eastern. I have to check with Willow. I think it's probably going to be 9 Central, 8 Mountain. And so that's going to be really fun. And let's see, did I forget anything, Jeff? I'm going to say, you have a show this week or month at all?
We're almost
in November.
Well, Marcia, we just have a veritable plethora of content about writing, poetry, and art, movies and film, just a great guest list coming up with some incredible hosts. We have a new host. Willow's a new host with us.
She's doing
one, Cassandra Jane. She's doing a great job as well. So the network grows, and we're able to.
Yes, it's great. It's really fun. And on November 5th, Virginia and I will be doing a launch with Denise Zarella, and it's a children's launch of a book. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to be tweeting, and that will be on, I think, at 4 Eastern. And then on the 5th of November, I have Brenda Perlin and and John Augustine, they're on. And then on the I have a lot of shows planned, and, we try to put them up so everybody can look at Blog Talk. And then I have a very interesting guest that I just talked to tonight, and we have Charlie Mathau is coming on the 19th. And Charlie is absolutely sounds just like his father, Walter Mathau, and it's going to be a really fun show. He's coming on by himself. We're going to be talking about old times, new times. He's got the movie Freaky Deaky coming out on YouTube. I think it's on iTunes, and that should be a really interesting show. He's a nice guy. Really, I loved his father. He's a great actor. And so that would be fun. I think that's what we got going here. And Fran has a few shows in November. And can you believe it's November already? I mean, it's like almost the end of the year.
I don't know what's Sunday or Monday, Marcia, so I'm only dealing with the days now.
I know. I'm dealing with, like, usually I don't have that much going on at the same time, but I decided to do this because sometimes I double book because I have three calendars, which is not a good thing to do, depending on where I am. All right, Jeff, you want to say who you are and what you do, and then we'll bring Amy out. I probably should say who I am.
I am R.J. Jeffrey. I am a writer, a poet, playwright. I host my own show, The Right Stuff with R.J. Jeffries, here on the World of Big Network. Thank you again, Marcia, for that honor.
Oh, you're welcome.
I'm also the associate editor for the Tefera Journal, as well as the producer for their Tefera Talk Interviews radio show. I blog. I have a book coming out in December in Mark Miller's One series, and a book of poetry coming out at the beginning of 2014, and I just try to stay busy with the audacity that I consider making stuff up and expecting
yeah.
to
be. Yeah, yeah, you got a lot going on. We all, you know, and I should say, you know, I'm Michigan Avenue Media, and we do a lot of launches, and I am an author and a screenwriter, and there we go. And, you know, and I'm going to introduce Amy. She is, you know, she wrote The Glass Wives. It's a really good book, and it's from St. Martin's Press, and I'm going to bring her on. She's going to tell you everything. She does a lot of things. Everybody does. You know, it's very interesting on all the shows how much everybody tries to get in one day. It's almost amazing how much we all try to get in. So, hi, Amy. How are you?
Hi, Marcia. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. You want to talk a little bit about all the things that you do, too? I mean, it's amazing, isn't it, when you start hearing all this? How do people do all
this? It is. I think you and Jeff are busier than me.
No, you're busy. You're busy.
I'm pretty busy, yes. Yes, I am. I'm a writer. I wrote The Glass Wives. I'm currently working on my second novel, which will come out in 2015. I'm a freelance writer and editor, and I also I'm a mother of two college students, and I have two dogs, which you know because you heard them barking a few minutes ago.
That's okay.
Yes. And that's really what I do to keep myself busy. I've also started teaching some online writing workshops, which has been really exciting.
You know what, you know, so you could always send me the links because I think, you know, people are always needing workshops. What have you had so far? What have you done so far?
Right now, the first one that I'm doing actually with Writer's Digest is freelancing for stay-home moms, which is really geared toward anyone who's very, very busy and wants to learn kind of how to start or kickstart a freelancing career or add it kind of to what they've been doing. It happens to be all women in the workshop right now, but certainly there's nothing in it that would preclude a man from being in there, and it's really not, it's kind of divided between working moms and stay-home moms. You know, it's just, it's kind of advice for some busy people who want to get a little bit more into writing.
Yeah, everybody could use a little advice. You know, I think that's one of the things that people don't realize is that you need to have, you know, even if you're writing for years, there's always something you learn. I mean, from every show that I've had, which is like over 400, right, I've learned something about the authors and things that they, you know, are doing that might help me to, you know, and I think that that's the one thing is you have to take some help out there every now and then.
Right.
That sounds interesting.
Well, before I started teaching the workshop, one of the things I told the people in charge was that I considered myself a workshop junkie. I had been taking writing workshops when I started writing in 2006, when I started writing my novel through freelancing and writing short stories. I always liked that extra feedback, a little bit of instruction, direction, and feedback from an instructor, and I've met really good friends in workshops, and they've all been online. There isn't really anything offered where I live in person, so it's all been online.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're in Chicago, but you're further out than I am, but you're in Chicago.
I'm in the suburbs, yeah.
Yes, yeah, and
right.
I'm in the other suburbs, and it's kind of weird because I hardly,
right.
you know, out of all the guests I've interviewed, there's very few from Chicago. Everybody's from New York or the East.
I've met more and more Chicago authors, right, but there's really nothing available where I live for writers.
Yeah, yeah, and because basically in downtown Chicago is where everything happens, you know, basically. And on the outskirts of either suburban north or south, that's what happens, you know, it's not as much. I used to take workshops,
right.
you know, and But the ones that I took, you know, they were really good, except I just kept sitting there thinking, because sometimes they gave such, I mean, it was really tough. You know, they were tough on people. And we didn't have to write. It was just people, authors came to speak. But then if they read them, it was, I always said, oh, I cannot do this. Because I, you know, they really just went crazy by telling them things about what wasn't good. And I'm thinking, will they ever write again? I mean, and, you know, because sometimes that hurts, you know. And sometimes people want advice, but they really don't want advice. So
well,
you have to
I think
pick
the
and choose.
Key when, right, I do a lot of freelance editing. And I think that the key is to give your feedback and your advice in a nice way that's instructional and not critical. I think
right.
There's a difference.
There is a huge difference.
I try to teach the authors that I edit how to improve their own writing, not just
right.
telling them what to do, but showing them how to do it. And that seems, and I have found, like you found, that interviewing authors and writers is interesting and helpful to you. It's very helpful being a freelance editor. I find it's very helpful for my own writing to be analyzing someone else's work and working on it with them. So, you know, it's beneficial to me as well.
Let's talk about your book. Go ahead. Jeff, you want to ask something? Go ahead.
Thank you, Marcia. Amy, what are some of the devices, some of the processes that you go through with the writers you work with to help them find really their voice, to find what they really want to say, how they want to say it, in the way they want to say it? What are some of the things that you do, tools you give them, or ways that you assist them to find that voice?
Well, it depends. If I'm working on a piece of fiction, a novel, then what's important is that the voice in the novel of the character remain consistent. I really haven't had a problem so far with an author necessarily trying to find their voice as much as trying to polish it and fine-tune it. And a lot of authors will come to me kind of right before they think they're ready to look for a literary agent. I've done some work with authors who wanted to self-publish. So I don't see a lot of first drafts. I see more an almost finished product that might need some help with character arcs or plot, story, dialogue. It's a lot of fine-tuning. I have done some books that were more in the initial stages, and that's definitely more difficult for the writer and for the editor, because I think your work really has to be at a certain stage before an editor can really even help you.
Do you get
editing?
Do you do actual line editing for some authors?
Yes, I will. It depends what they're looking for. I have different things that I offer. Some people will want you to read their work and just give you an overall opinion of what's working and what's not working. And other times, I found a very popular option for authors is where I will give them feedback almost after every scene or every few scenes, so I can help them along the way in the story instead of waiting till the end. And then there are people who want comments, you know, line editing all the way through. I don't copy edit, so I make sure that people understand the difference between copy editing and developmental editing, content editing, or line editing. You know, I can do some light copy editing, but not the real heavy lifting. And my clients will attest to the fact that even when I'm supposed to be commenting only after chapters or scenes, I'm also making notes in the margins as well, just because
it's
they start coming to me.
Is that it's more, it's an issue of continuity, which is essential to any story in any book, in my opinion.
Right.
The operative word is continuity.
And if things are believable, you know, I want to give a writer what they want. So some people don't want to change their story. They want their story to work, and I can help them do that. And others want to know if their story is working. Everyone's different. You know that. You're both
right.
Writers. There are times that you just want. I have clients that say, be honest with me. Be honest with me. Does it work? Is this a good idea? Do you think this is a good idea? I can't promise them anything, but I can certainly see potential in something.
Right.
I
when you're writing, you never know. You know,
right,
when,
but
you
I
know,
would suggest that it's essential that no matter where a writer is in their career, whether and this I believe is a truism in our craft, is you need to have an editor. And there'll be things you can look at
a couple
of times, look fine to you, and just a second pair of eyes will go, I saw this over here that you didn't see, and then they will. So having an editor when you're writing anything, I think, is essential. A book, absolutely mandatory in my opinion. Even a story 5,000 words in length, you're talking 5,000 or 6,000 words. A second pair of eyes, someone who has editing ability, knows your work and knows you as well, is an added plus, is essential.
See, what you said, knows you. And knows, see, that's the thing. I've been lucky enough to have the same editor that edits all my things. And, you know, I know if I have a problem and I'm thinking that I have a problem, I know he's going to find the problem for me. And when he does find the problem for me, and then but I fix it myself. You know,
well,
that is the one thing.
I look at it as a more positive bent on that, Marcia. They'll find the solution, right?
Yeah, you know, and I knew, like my last one was Virginia. I knew that Virginia Templeton, it was kind of hard because this was the first time I ever did, you know, like anything with, you know, radical. Like I've had scripts that had a lot of things, but in scripts you don't get detailed because in a script for a movie you just kind of, you know, just say it and it's over. But, you know, and I said, can he do this for me? You know, because I've done him all these books. And, you know, and he was fine with it and he liked it and he was very, it was good because when there were problems, just there was one big problem, which I knew existed, and then he told me there was a problem, and then I fixed it, and I got it back to him right away because I knew there was, and I just wanted someone else to say, yes, this doesn't fit, and it wasn't right. And then, but mostly, I hope people find editors that know them well enough so that the book sounds like them, because a lot of people, what they're doing now is they write a book, they don't look back, and then they let the editor write the book for them.
Oh,
and that's not a good thing. Yeah, it's not a good thing.
No,
because it's not their book.
No. Right.
And they do that all the time. They let the editor, they go, oh, fine, the editor will do this, the editor will do that. But, you know, editors really aren't supposed to write the story. They're supposed to help you.
Exactly.
But that is
what
you
have to fix it yourself. Right.
You know, I was listening to a show the other day. It was Fran's show, and somebody was on the show. Justin was on, one of her guests, and what was interesting to me is I haven't heard this in a long time from people. A lot of times, because I know for me it takes a long time, and I'm sure I can tell by the characters that you have, it takes time to mold a character, to try to understand a character, and sometimes you'll be thinking of something and then you figure it out. Well, he was talking about how important that was, and I'm thinking how great this is to hear this, because all I see lately is everybody, they are getting books done so fast, and I'm a fast-paced person, but I can't do it. I mean, you'll say, look, okay, now my book is out, and in a month later, their book is out. I mean, it takes me a long time to kind of know my characters and then think of all the characteristics, and I can see that indefinitely in your book. I just want to say this is a line in here that, you know, I forgot to ask you if you wanted to read anything from your book. I forgot to ask you.
I'm happy to talk about it, but I don't need to read from it.
Right. But if you wanted,
and
I meant to ask you that.
Marcia, I want to ask Amy if I may. You know, the point I'm making is it's all about the story. And there's a backstory to behind the Glass Wives, Amy. Can you elaborate on what that is for our audience?
Sure. Well, the Glass Wives is about a divorced mom in the Chicago suburbs whose ex-husband dies suddenly. And then she takes in his young widow and baby to live with her and her children. And the story really centers around what makes a family and what constitutes a normal family in today's world. Mm-hmm. And that's basically the gist of it, I guess, if you can to summarize.
No, and it's absolutely, you know what, and it's so believable because this, you know, this is what happens in life. You know, I mean,
right.
And that you try to be friendly maybe with the wife of, you know, your ex-husband or whatever, because for the kids, you know, most of everything
right.
that mothers try to do is for their, and fathers too, but is for the children, you know, to
right.
keep them, you know, as happy as can be, you know, without,
right.
you know, try. You know, I see from a lot of people that I know, you know, sometimes, you know, the kids, you know, you can't blame everything if a child does something wrong or if they're not, you know, working out in school about the fact that if they're divorced. Or, that's really, it's not always about that because kids are kids, and these happen to kids that aren't from divorced homes. Things happen, you know, and
right.
where they're unhappy. So I think, you know, in your situation here, it was so, it was an unusual situation, but such a different, you know, way to write a book. The way you, I mean, you just were really speaking so simply and just from the heart.
Well, thank you.
That is a good story, Amy, but what about the backstory? Like, you would put something in the back, which could be in the front, talking about the actual backstory behind the Glasswise.
Well, I started to write the Glasswise. I had never written fiction before. I had always written articles and essays. I had not written short stories, or I did as a child, as in school, I'm sure. But I was a journalism major in college, and I became a blogger, so everything I wrote was true. And about a little less than 10 years ago, in real life, my ex-husband did pass away. Where that wasn't the impetus initially for the novel, it was certainly a lot of story ideas started there, and I knew that I didn't want to write a memoir because, honestly, I thought I didn't want to go over and relive everything that had happened in
yeah.
real life to me
yeah.
and my children. I also felt
yeah.
like it wasn't their story, wasn't mine to tell.
Right.
And so I didn't do that. But what I did do was I took the idea of a divorced family and losing basically the person that connects them and then what happens after that. When I speak to groups at bookstores or libraries or book clubs, you know, I have to tell you, reassure you that, you know, in The Glasswise, Evie Glass welcomes, somewhat reluctantly, her ex-husband's widow into her home. And she lives in, you know, her bedroom's in the basement with her baby. And I don't have anybody living in my basement.
Right.
And
I know, that's one thing. Sometimes people think that what you write might be you. You know, right, it's you. Everything that happens,
well, you know, and
you write,
there are corollaries. There certainly are. You know, Evie Glass is a divorced Jewish mom, and so am I. I live in the suburbs of Chicago, although I don't live in the northern suburbs, which is where I placed my fictional town of Lakewood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, the I guess the similarity is that I struggled with my idea of family, and that started when I got divorced.
Right.
Because it just wasn't kind of what I had thought of.
Right. You just don't think of, right, something, you just don't, you know, this isn't the thought that comes to you right away. You know, it's just, yeah.
My friends were married, people in my family were married, divorce wasn't something that was part of my life, and then it was.
Right.
And then when my ex-husband passed away, there was another reconfiguration of family, of figuring
yeah.
out if he was married again. So
mm-hmm.
were the people that he brought into my children's life, were they still part of their family? And how did I, what were we to each other? You know, because we weren't related. So
mm-hmm.
it was, you know, it's
a question that, it's a question that could come up in very many
yeah.
lives. I mean, it's
yeah.
reality in that respect is, you know, what could happen to a life.
Right, right. So it was, I have discovered that I write to answer questions for myself. I don't write to, some people say they write, so they have stories to tell that they want to share with the world. I think that's wonderful. I kind of write and it's, a story that I have that I want to figure out. The character, main character, has an issue or a problem, and I want to find out how she gets through that or what her struggles are. And it's personal. It has to be personal to me. So, I kind of write for myself, and then when I'm editing and polishing, and then I start to think about the reader and the publishing world and making sure that things are correct in a story format, that things are happening so people turn the page, and but the actual story, I kind of write for myself, and then,
But Amy, also in The Glass Wives, there's a universality to theme I found in it. Of forgiveness and family, and if people can't relate to them, I don't think they're on this planet.
They don't always forgive, though. That's the thing, and they make it difficult on everybody, But it's human nature sometimes to do certain things. But then, this was not something that people would think about, moving in together with the ex-wife, but. In a lot of ways, things work out that you don't really expect in life.
To take away from that? Obviously, we just discussed the theme of that, in my opinion. But is that what you want the readers to take away from that, to learn how to figure it out as they go and just share that experience with you as they read your characters and they read The Glass Wives and come out with, I don't want to put your words in your mouth. What do you want the reader to walk away from when they're done with The Glass Wives?
Sometimes I think the takeaway should be that all families are equal, very, very simply. As a single mom where I live, most of the people that I was with or friends with and around all the time were married. And as much as it's kind of normal to be divorced families weren't treated the same as married families, at least not where I lived.
Yeah.
There was, a father's thing at my daughter's Sunday school one day, and I, was dads and kids building something. You can't do that. You can't do that today. I like to think that in writing the book, I became more accepting, and that's really the goal. And if other people have that takeaway, then that would please me. But I think that it helped me be more accepting and forgiving, to remember that everybody has their shtick. For lack of a word, nobody's perfect. People have secrets. People have things they're ashamed of. People have things they're proud of. And
I think people do have secrets. I think that sometimes you can be very close with people, but that doesn't mean you have to share everything.
Absolutely.
Everybody has their own private thoughts sometimes, and it really doesn't always come out in a conversation, So you could be looking at someone, and they're telling you completely opposite of what they're feeling, but they just don't want to bear it all to you. They just can't.
Right.
And sometimes they can't face it themselves.
Right. Exactly.
And
that's
really
one of the characters in the book as well.
Yeah.
She wastes a long time to reveal something to her best friend because she just...
Yeah.
Was afraid of the consequences.
Yeah, because even if it were a best friend, you just sometimes, a best friend could be almost like a spouse, because it's sometimes you don't know how they're going to react. And if you've been friends with them for a long time, you don't want to ruin anything that they might, that could happen, because sometimes something that somebody does isn't wonderful or has done something
Absolutely.
That they are ashamed of.
Right. Absolutely. Actually, the book that I'm writing right now, which doesn't have a title, but the idea of it is, it is written, it's being revised right now, but it still doesn't have a title. And it's about a divorced mom who lies about having a wonderful boyfriend. And based on the stories that she's telling on her own blog, she gets hired to be kind of a dating blogger on a popular website, when in reality she hasn't dated in years.
Yeah, right.
She really gets too ashamed to say that she made those stories up because they made her feel better or they were fun to think of and write.
Yeah.
And she, you know, she wanted to come clean, but just kind of gets caught up in the lies.
And sometimes people just don't come clean ever, ever.
That's
absolutely
correct.
Yeah,
right.
I love that premise. I mean, that's a great, I'm looking for Amy.
Thank you.
I'm looking forward to absolutely reading that. I love the premise of that. So you're saying that the person purports to be a nonfiction blogger and it's all fiction. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's what's writing. Sometimes you don't really know. You don't really know if somebody's telling
you,
if it's really,
right.
really the truth. And it shouldn't really matter. It should just be an experience for the reader.
Right.
You know, both ways.
In my head, I think we all run across people who tell fibs. And then there are people who really kind of tell some real whoppers, I would say.
Yeah.
And it's something personally I don't understand. I think it takes too much effort. If you're not telling the truth, you have a lot to remember. And that's the problem that the character has. You get
ends
up being very flustered. This is also the online world, so she's very caught up in that. But for me to write this, because I do know of people who have kept very big secrets and told a lot of lies, so for me it's a way to kind of make sense of something I don't understand and tell hopefully a really good story.
I mean, because everybody, you know, like you're saying, right? Like I know when I was a young girl, my mother, she used to say, "I always know when you're lying because she could tell by my face." You know, some people are really good at lying; they can look right at you, and they are lying.
You don't
to
have to look at somebody on the internet.
No, right? Yeah, exactly. And that, okay. So, all right. So, how do you feel about that? Because that is the huge issue now. I think that people are getting very caught up meeting people and getting jealous and they're of all the things that people are doing and maybe they're not doing. And how do you feel about that? Because they are, I think a lot of people are lying to people online.
I think I'm really glad I'm writing a book that incorporates.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, maybe your timing could not be more apropos because the next edition, I think it may just already be out, the DSM, Diagnosticism Manual for Psychologists and Psychiatrists, is including a internet addiction as an issue to be dealt with people in therapy.
Right.
So you are very timely, my friend.
Yeah, because I think I think this could be bad.
Yeah.
I think it could be really bad for people because I'm watching people on here a lot of times, and I'm just kind of looking at them and I'm watching their blogs, and I'm not even their blogs. I'm watching them on Facebook, and I'm saying, "Oh my God, what are they doing?" And you know, some people, you know, some things you don't have to say to 1,000 people because it's not necessary or more that know about these things. And I just think people aren't really paying attention to the fact that they're really saying things that they shouldn't. But you can't tell people, like, why did you say that? Yeah.
Right, right. Words have consequences, even on the internet. And I don't think, you can type much faster than you can think sometimes, I believe.
Yeah.
Right? And when we're writing, as writers, we go back and we revise things, but when people are posting
on Facebook
or Twitter or Instagram or whatever it is that people are doing at any moment, then they just hit send, and it's easy to get caught up. And that's
what, Amy, it's easy to become an anonymous hero or a heroine, isn't it?
Blogger in my book is anonymous. That makes it both easier and harder.
Can you talk about, speaking of blogs, the good to easy tangent here, or transition, women's fiction writer's blog? You said you're in a bit of an island there in Chicago, but having the net, which does have obviously have its benefits as well, and I love the subtitle. I've got to give the subtitle. It's Women's Fiction Writers, and the subtitle is No Heroes, No Zombies, No High Heels, Well, Maybe High Heels. Keep that. I love that.
Can you talk a little bit about that,
how to make the internet an effective place for us writers to share, commiserate, and just um, and and realize that, yeah, we are odd ducks, but at least we line up in the same row together.
Right, right. Well, for years I was really active on a forum website group called Backspace,
mm-hmm.
and I'm still a member there, and it's forums and all kinds of writers and chatting and help, and it's not a critique site. It's more of a sharing and information site. I was really looking for something where I could connect with writers who wrote the type of stories and novels that I was writing and wanted to write. Not romance,
mm-hmm.
but what I considered women's fiction. And at the time, I didn't know that it was really like a hot-button topic being called women's fiction. And I started the blog for myself because I wanted to reach out to other writers. I had been blogging since 2006. I had a few different blogs you might have called mommy blogs, and then I had one that was just like a writer blog. So I had been blogging already for 5 years.
Yeah,
when
2011
I did that.
When you started this official,
when
right?
I started this one. And I, let's see, about once a week, I interview a women's fiction author, which does not have to be a woman, and showcase her book, interview the author about their story, their writing process, publishing. I'll also accept some guest posts from authors. I do normally feature traditionally published authors because that's the world I'm entrenched in. I will accept guest posts on writing craft from some independent authors, and also have their book cover up and their links. And I also do personal posts about writing or about my life, and that's kind of, I've had to lighten up a little bit because I didn't realize what it would be like, how busy
yeah.
I would be when my book came out. And it was a
yeah,
little
you never know.
You're
right. You don't, right. You don't know, right.
No, you don't know. The blog was very busy, and I was very busy, and I take a lot of time doing a lot of research on the authors and their books before I conduct the interviews, which I do via email, but still I take a lot of time.
Yeah.
And so I found that, you know, pulling that back to mostly once a week was best for me, and so allowed me to have the high-quality post. But the blog took off right away because we were talking about what was women's fiction, and it's kind of an umbrella term that means it appeals to women.
Right.
Or it's a story about a woman, but it's not romance, even though there could might be a little romance in there.
Which is a very difficult
novel.
Thing to process for people, that there are,
yes,
that this is so, there's such a large amount of, you know, authors now. It's huge. I mean, and women's fiction, you know, and right. And I think people say that sometimes if there's a sex scene, if a man writes it, it's okay in a book. But if a woman writes it, it becomes a romance novel.
And right.
That's really not
right.
true. It's just part of life.
No. And there's been a lot of debate about the,
yeah.
the label
yeah.
of women's fiction, and people don't like it because there's no label men's fiction. I don't really mind having people realize that my probably intended audience for my writing is women. That's, I am one. I don't know why
right.
that would bother me.
Yeah, right, right.
Maybe
I, yeah.
You know, I happen to, if my main character is a woman, I know some men, and even some that weren't related to me, that read
right.
the book and really liked it.
But see, sometimes you don't really know if they're, you know, I have actually in the next book I'm writing, my Prince Charming, is that you know, he is writing, he writes romance, but he's a man, you know, and there are a lot of great
right.
writers that we probably don't even know about that are men that are writing women's, and they just can, the voice
right.
is there for them.
Right.
Well, I'll tell
exactly.
you, the women that you have had submit to your blog, and by the way, absolutely check it out, women writers, I want to make sure I get this right, women's fiction writers, is it wordpress.com or can they just do women?
Yeah, you can just do .com, womenswomensfictionwriter.com, and
that'll
take you right
.com.
There.
.com, I want to be clear about that, but you've had some amazing people down there. Karen
yes,
Leavitt,
I'm very
Holly Robinson, who you and I know, is where
yes.
she's our favorite hero, speaking of heroes.
Yes.
Just wonderful place. So I'm just want to interject that and make sure it's said. that people visit your blog. It's wonderful.
Well,
and
you
can always look for your name. See, your name is out there, you know, and, you know, see, that's what sometimes people don't realize, that, you know, you don't even have to know the .com. If you put in Amy Sue Nathan, you will come up with things.
You will. You will come up with a lot of things.
Yes,
and
a lot.
And
a
all
lot.
Of them are fine.
Yes.
I've done it.
Right,
so acceptable.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. You never know. You know, some people have the same name, and that is difficult these days if somebody has a name
that's why I had to add an extra J to mine. To my name. Then they change it from R. Jeffries to R.J. Jeffries, and I'll tell you, you know, the Google Analytics and all that stuff and all those little robot texts went crazy, like, ahoo.
Yeah,
so I had to almost recreate myself. By this, I should write a story about this. Recreate myself or reinvent myself with an extra letter J in my nom de plume.
Yeah.
Well, Jeff, I will tell you that I did the same thing. My name that my parents gave me, my middle name is Sue, but I always wrote as Amy Nathan when I was published. I wrote for the Chicago Tribune for a few years. I had short stories published, and I was Amy Nathan. And then I discovered there were several other Amy Nathans that had kind of a public job. And then I Googled Amy Sue Nathan, and there were none, and I thought that would be a better fit.
Mm-hmm.
Because
That's
then
exact-
there would be no confusion, and that would be better, and it has worked out really well.
For me, I mean, it was also that, of course, but also just because it was easier for people and more comfortable for me to people not to keep calling me Hey R. I figured at least RJ was a little bit easier for me and for them.
It is so difficult now to, you know, to really figure out names. You know, I mean, even when I did my Virginia series, I made up the name Madison Montgomery. I did not realize. Because I've always been making up names. When you write, you make up names, you know, screenplay, you know, you just make up a name.
And
then I made up a name where there's a lot of Madison Montgomerys, a lot.
Okay.
So I went back to Marcia Casper Cook because there's nobody with that so far that I've seen.
Right.
So, you know, but Madison, I love the name and I loved it. But then I realized there's so many. It's a very popular name. But who knew? I didn't. I had no idea.
Right.
You know, I just was so used to making up names that I did. But I made up a popular one, no less. But on Facebook, it is hard because you see people put the initials on. They have to now. You know, because sometimes you're really not that person. And it's, you know, and like you're saying, you don't have anything bad written about you. That's right. You know, you could end up with something that's not you.
And that is social networking and promoting the book because, you know, Amy is one of those people that are on the front lines. She literally hits the streets to go out there with the book. And sometimes,
I believe
for a while ago, a few years ago, before all the changes in the industry, it was like, okay, you publish it, and then you start the next one, and it will take care of itself. Well, that's no longer the case, in my opinion.
It's not.
Especially
you're right.
So, Amy, what do you do? What is your process? What are the processes you do to promote your book? And this will be helpful information, trust me, for everyone listening, how important what you're about to hear is.
Well, I think that the important thing is to have some type of social media presence that doesn't revolve around trying to sell something. I think that's first and foremost. You have to have a huge online footprint. I think people worry too much about that. But if you do what makes you comfortable, whether it's Pinterest or Twitter or Facebook or all of the things people can do today, there's lots of them. If you pick one that you're comfortable with and there's the content, whether it's about the subject you write about. If you write stories about chickens and you have a Pinterest board with lots of chickens, you're going to have people who are looking there at the wonderful pictures of chickens. And then when you get your book about chickens published, those people will be interested because they have enjoyed all your pictures of chickens. But if you just kind of pop onto the scene and say, follow this link to my book, that's not going to work. So I didn't do it intentionally at first. I started blogging kind of just to have a place to tell my personal stories. And as I got into writing, I did realize that everything I did would lead to name recognition. And if people think they know you and feel they know you and you're genuine, which I believe I am, I always try to be, then they're interested in what you do. If you share your process, if you share your stories, if you help people out who need help, I won't edit a whole manuscript for free. I do it for a job. But if someone on a website asks for help with their log line or their query or something they can't figure out, I always want to help. Why wouldn't I want to help? People helped me. So I think that's the first thing, is to get yourself out there, because most people aren't going to get, you know, a huge marketing budget, and most books aren't going to get, you know, on a New York Times list, which helps it sell no matter what you do.
Right.
But I think that all the connections that I've made have made me, it might sound very silly, but like a happy author. You know, I have a lot of, you know, I have a big community of published authors and aspiring authors.
Right, and people you never would have met, ever. You would not have
met. Never, ever would have met.
I know.
It sounds to me like you've got a wonderful extended family, and that's what that sense of community is. I could not agree with you more.
Yeah.
Right, and I think that's what people should do.
You know, on occasions, but it's just good karma, and it's just, we live such, I don't want to say hidden lives, but sort of insulated lives. Writers, I mean, how many of the people, when you ask them what their job is, they say, okay, I sit down for 8 to 10 hours all by myself in my room, and I type, and I make stuff.
Right.
You know, so there's that isolation. So, yeah, that community, and that's an exponential thing as well. I mean, you help that person, they'll help another, and that it increases your community, the size. And now, again, with the web, it's a global reach. There's people that correspond with in Asia, in Australia.
Oh, everywhere.
I'm serious. I mean, there's people all over the globe. And paying it forward, that little random act of kindness, especially to the new writer, can literally have a global effect on not only their work, but the rest of their life as a writer in their craft.
And honestly, it makes me feel good to help other people, because I remember when I was new and I joined Backspace, and there were published authors and agents on there, and people would answer my questions. People would give me feedback, constructive, kind, but strong feedback on things I would ask about. I mean,
I think that's
so
something that a lot of people
good.
May not be aware of, especially, again, sort of the writers just getting into the business part of it, that you would be amazed at how giving, you know, we all live busy lives, and these folks that are at that strata, you know, are always touring with the books and are always doing appearances on TV, whatever. They will stop. They'll take the time if you write them generally and have a question that they can tell you, you know.
I think people will reach out,
Marcia. I mean, there's people that have, I never thought in a million years would even know I existed, and here they were, and they were so kind and generous. You know, things I'll never forget they gave me.
Yeah. I just think it is good. Look, I did this for years, you know, being an agent. I used to, and I could not help a lot of people. I would have liked to, but they didn't stay in the game long enough. But the thing is, like, people that were in my office that worked for me at the time, they'd go like, you know, you're on the phone so long with these people. I'm going like, yeah. And they go like, get a timer and then get off. I go, are you seriously telling me to get a timer? That's not going to happen. You know, I'm not timing my calls to get off because I'm listening to somebody, you know. And it is hard when you're listening to them. You can't just hang up on people because this is such a hard profession. And my goal is to want people to be in it. And there's nobody to help them. A lot of times, nobody helps them. Your friends and family do not know about this because there's nobody that can understand, unless you're another author, how many hours you're doing things and you're not getting paid for it. And why would you do this? Because we love it. That's why we do it.
Right.
Otherwise, we wouldn't do it.
You're right.
Of word, we love what we do. How many people can get up and say, you know what, I'm about to sit down and do what I love? I never forget how blessed I am just by that fact. And the added bonus, the added blessings is to be able to do a show with you, speak with Amy, talk with other writers, commiserate with them, and just realize that, I don't have a normal job, but it's okay. It's okay to do what I do. I'm doing what I love, and other people, you know, are doing the same thing, and we're having fun at it.
I think the radio shows for me, you know, it's like for me, the radio shows, I remember, you know, I was just telling someone that today, you know, I didn't even know if I ever wanted to do radio. I went on to do a show, which Jeff, you know, we did the Red River. She posted something on Facebook one night. It was like 2 in the morning. They go, do people want to come on Red River? You want to read some of your book? I'm going like, oh, I do not want to do this, because everybody said, you have to do this. And I'm going like, I'm not doing this. And then I finally said yes, and I went on. And so I did it for 5 minutes, and it was hard, and I was nervous. And I'm not a nervous person that way, but I was nervous. And
right.
so
right.
then, you know, after that, you know, then I was on another Time This Woman show, and then April Robin, then she said, do you want to do a show? I go, like, what? And then I did shows for her. And it was like, I always remember how nervous I was, and that's why sometimes I have 4 and 5 people on so they don't feel nervous, because this way it's not just on them. You know, if you don't know what
right.
to say and it's an hour, you got an hour show. And the person, I don't
right.
want to make them feel uncomfortable, because it's not that easy for everybody. And the reason
I don't
have like to come
talking for an hour.
Right. Apparently none of us were here. But, you know, but the thing is, I do call people a lot of times and like to talk to them first, because I just want to feel them out and see if they can, because I don't want anybody to be uncomfortable and be nervous. Like if you're on TV, let's just say, you do not get it. Nobody gets an hour interview like this. And you don't get it from people that are authors. So if you're on TV or somebody's interviewing you and they've never written a book, they just don't get what we go through.
Well, Marcia, see, for me, this is such a great venue, because I have a great face for radio, so it's perfect for me. Amy, would you give some advice to our listeners, what to do when they're looking to get their first book, novel published?
Well, I think the best thing for them to do is to finish their book.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people worry. I think I think writers are thinkers, and thinkers are worriers, and I have come across a lot of people who worry that they won't be able to go on a book tour, but they haven't started writing their book yet.
Right, exactly.
Or people who
have worried about
a pseudonym for a book they haven't started yet.
Yep.
Or a title for a book when publishers change titles all the time.
That's right.
So I try to help people, like, think about it for a little while, because it makes you feel better, and then stop. And the most important thing is to write the book, the whole book, start
right.
to finish,
yeah.
and then to write it again, and to revise it, and to have you have to have people read it that don't love you.
Yeah,
basically,
yep.
you have to have people read it who know about writing, and
yep.
or avid readers who aren't afraid to hurt your feelings nicely, hopefully.
Right, right.
Because that's important. People who can help you get the story into as good a shape as possible, and also to learn as much about however you'd like to publish your book as possible. If you want to traditionally publish your book, you should be reading agent blogs and editor blogs, and you should subscribe to newsletters that talk about traditional publishing and follow the news and follow everyone on Twitter and see what's happening and read author blogs. And I'm not self-published, but I would imagine it's the same thing. If you write the book, then you should have all the information at your fingertips as to how to do whatever you want to do the best way you can. To get an agent took me 10 months. And
That's actually very good. That's very good.
Yeah, Marcia, that is.
It took me 10 months, and then we revised, with his help, I revised my manuscript again for another year. And then he took it out on submission, and it sold within about a month to St. Martin's Press. So it was, you know, I certainly know people who worked for 10, 12, 18 years on a novel, or had many, many others. I was fortunate. It was the first novel that I wrote, and I wrote for 4 years. I wrote it for 4 years until it sold at Termins. I would never call myself stubborn.
You have to be absolutely determined. There's no way.
And you know, I don't look
determined
at that
to have it published.
Amy, you know, I don't look at that waiting, you know, the agent or whatever, or the publisher wherever you want to have it published, it's not wasted time, in my opinion, because you can still work on that again, refine more, edit more, whatever, share it back and forth with your editor, work on something new. But it's not like a painting. You finish painting, and you're looking around for a gallery to sell it for you, to put it on the wall. That's the beauty of our craft. You're always working at it, and there's always something else you can write. While you're waiting.
I do have to say something about self-publishing. You know, because I spent years trying to get people's books published that couldn't get published, and to the top ones, because I was a WGA agent, and that was not really the problem with me. It was that I just didn't like some of their books, and they were absolutely wonderful writers. If they would have stayed in the game, they would be so successful now. They just didn't.
Right.
And it's a shame. You know, and I, you know, kept saying to people, just stay in this game, and they wouldn't, and they were very insecure. And, you know, writers can be that way, but it's just the fact of don't give up, because if you give
don't
up, you'll
give
never
up.
Know. And now with self-publishing, look, I'm not telling everybody to go out and self, but I hear such horror stories, and that's one of the reasons I talk about this a lot, is you cannot, if you spend a lot of money on self-publishing, if you spend 10 grand, you can't do that. You have to check.
No.
That's one of the things. You have to make sure that people know. I mean, now you can go to Creative Space, but you need to be edited. You need to do a lot of right things. That's why all of the shows that are on, like, you know, certainly with World of Ink, we all give advice, everybody, you know, on how to do things and make sure you get edited and get a good cover, do everything right. But when they used to come to me and they spent $10,000, yeah, I am going to stay on the phone talking to them, because I feel like I have to, because I feel so bad that they've done that, you know, and they do.
Yeah, it has changed, and I know a lot of wonderful books have been self-published, but that's not, I mean, for me, I can't give advice in that arena. I just know that it is possible to be traditionally published.
Yes, it is.
Because I did it. And every time I heard of a friend getting a book deal or a book being published, I honestly didn't feel jealous, per se. I was hopeful in thinking that if that person could do it, that means books are being bought.
Right.
People are very angry when celebrities get book deals. I feel like those books probably make a lot of money for the publisher.
They do.
If that means they also have, that means they have money for a couple new authors because they made a lot of money on another
book. That's right. That's exactly
right. You know,
That's why they take them. Of course.
And
then that's
okay with me. I just, you know, I think that whatever a writer's goal is, that they should go for it, and that if, you know,
I agree on that.
A lot of work.
I want you to give your website and everything before, because I know that, you know, you had a one-hour commitment because I know you were busy, and you wanted to be off in an hour. So I want to not forget the things like, you know, your links and everything, where you are and where they can find you, because this is truly a really good book. And when you look at a book like this, you will know, I mean, this is good writing. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Marcia,
it's
a beautifully written book, and I recommend it to everyone if they pick this up. It, you know, there are good summer reads, but this is a book that will stay with you all year long.
That's the one thing. There is a difference, you know, and, you know, you have to go through some of the rejections and things like that in order to feel like, yes, you've accomplished something. And you have accomplished something. It's a great press that you're with, so you should be very proud of
it. I had over 80 rejections from agents.
Okay.
I sent 116 queries.
Well, I'll keep those. right. And the thing is, but you know what? You have a really good publisher. I mean, I think there's probably nobody out there that would not be happy being St. Martin's, you know.
Absolutely.
And so it's wonderful. It's really good to, you know, to know that you've gotten to a place where at least, you know, whatever happens in your career, but you've done this. And so it's really to be so proud of yourself, because it's incredible to get published in this day and age from such a good publisher on a first novel.
Thank you. Yes, I am. It was a real good realization of a wonderful goal for me. I kind of set out to do it and kind of wasn't going to stop until it happened. I don't know what I would have done if it didn't happen. But it did, so I don't have to worry about it.
Right. You don't have to think about that then. All right. So where, what's your website? And so just so people know where they can find your blog and everything.
Yes. Where can
My website, which has information about the book and book clubs, is amysuenathan.com. And my blog, which has always some information from me and women's fiction writers and books and writing craft, is womensfictionwriters.com, all kind of one word smushed together. You can follow me on Twitter, you know, that's at Amy Sue Nathan, and I tweet a lot about, really about writing, sometimes about nonsense, like some people do, but mostly for marketing. I'm on Facebook, Amy Sue Nathan Author, which has links to all of the essays and interviews on the blog, and also other writer-type news, you know, where I'm speaking or anywhere that I'm going to be. About this interview is on my author page on Facebook. So
Amy, let
me
know your full name if I can, because sometimes it's Amy with an I in it. It's
AmySueNathan.
Thank you. This has been marvelous. What a wonderful guest.
It's been great.
Thank
you so much for coming on. And, you know, you're in Chicago, so I hope someday we can meet. We get to meet each other.
I
think that, you know, I think there's a huge community in Chicago. I kind of do my own thing, but there is a very huge community of writers in the middle of Chicago, in Chicago per se.
Yeah.
But what do we say? But with the internet and all this and everything and telephones and we don't have to worry. We can still communicate. So
and
thank you.
And your book is due, your new book is due, what, for 2015? Is that the...
Hopefully the spring of 2015.
Okay.
And so maybe we can do this again.
That
oh, definitely.
Like a plan to me.
Definitely. That's a plan.
I'm
planning on having you again, especially when I have other people with maybe bloggers, and because those are, I like to have blogger shows because I like people to hear from bloggers because it's a huge thing now, blogging.
Yes.
And it's very helpful to a lot of people.
Yes, I agree.
You know, it's become a new thing. That's something that's helpful, thank goodness. Okay.
Thank you, Mark.
All right. And, Jeff, thank you so much. And
looking forward
to talking to you. And it was great. And thank everybody. And Fran will be on Thursday. So listen to our shows and have some fun because we always like to have a good time on the shows. And you never know what's going to happen. So, all right, so have a great week. And thank you again, Amy. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Marcia.
Bye-bye.